Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com,
a production of Serotech Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 98 for March 5th, 2012. I'm Jamie Pauls.
I'm Lisa Salinger.
And I'm Buddy Brandon.
What's up with the new voices this week? Is this Triple Click Home? It's not. Is it Serospectives? I don't think so.
It's the, we didn't go to CSUN edition.
It's Triple Spectives.
Triple Spectives. I love
triple
that. I've been trying all morning to think of something. That's awesome.
It's Triple Spectives. That's what it is.
Or you could call it the Three Faces of Serotech podcast. That could be fun.
Ooh, that would work. Three Faces of Serotech. Yeah.
No, the Three Faces. You know, like we're a little splintered and yeah, there you go.
Actually, it's because it's CSUN week. That's the reason you all are here. So welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, yes.
All right. Well, let's start off this week by talking about something that we never talk about on this podcast ever, and that's privacy. Shall we?
You know, when we started this, we were talking about how we're going to introduce ourselves.
Yeah.
And Jamie said I could be Joe, or somebody said I could be Joe, and Buddy could be Ricky. But you know what? I think I will be Joe, because I can hear Joe's voice. And I could hear it when I was looking at this article, where he's saying, no free lunch.
Right.
Right. In fact, the article even says no free lunch.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Or as Robert Heinlein actually famously said, Tannstoffel, right?
Yeah.
There ain't no such thing as a free lunch.
Actually, what's going on is Google, on March 1st, combined their services into basically collecting data from 60 of their 63 services.
I didn't even know they had that many.
I didn't either, actually. That's a story all by itself right there. So basically, they're not really collecting any more data from us as if they could possibly collect any more than they already are. They're just using it differently. That's the good news, I guess.
And they're using it across the board. They're sharing between all 60. I just can't get my head around that number. All 60 services.
Right. I mean, I guess the good news is, you know, as our article in our first in the show notes states, you need to be somewhere and you've set an appointment, and the Google Calendar is smart enough to say, hey, you're going to be late for this appointment if you don't leave right now because the traffic in your area is heavy. That's pretty cool. I mean, that's kind of a nice bonus, you know, to this new privacy or to this new change in how they collect data. I guess the bad news is even more of your personal information gets sent to advertisers, you know, but if they're going to go ahead and collect information from you, it might as well be personalized, and you might as well get advertisements that might actually interest you instead of something that doesn't interest you at all.
Yes, if they're going to bombard you with advertisements, they should bombard you with advertisements that you might actually find useful.
Right.
Exactly. I don't really find the fact that information is being customized for individual users disturbing. I find it a little worrying, I guess, to know what they're going to do with this information on their end. It still kind of gives me the creeps when I go onto a website and it mentions my city. It really does feel like Big Brother is watching you. But I wonder, what are they going to do? Are they going to put my information together with the information of other people in those cities? And who can they sell it to? Who can they give it to? And what can they do from there? I mean, we're already connected. The information is already out there. I guess it's really just a matter now of how it's going to be used and mixed and churned and what's going to come out of all of that.
Who's going to be able to track you by your Google profile?
Yes.
Well, and I don't know if I find it comforting or not that, you know, the government might look at laws to put in place governing collection and use and distribution of data. I mean, do I really want the government to get their hand in this as well and say what they think I should be able to keep personal and whatnot? I mean, at some point, I almost don't care anymore. And that's not, you know, quite true.
It's that we see so much of it, so much of the erosion of what we at one time considered to be private data and our, you know, our private movements and so forth. Not that kind, but eroding that, you know, it's just one more, oh, okay, yeah, this, some more of this. The other thing, though, I think is that I thought was kind of interesting was that yesterday I saw another, and I don't remember if I saw a link to something or if it was just something that somebody mentioned on, I think it was just something somebody mentioned on Twitter, is that in the EU, Google's privacy policy as announced for March 1st is already illegal in the EU. So what is that going to actually mean in the long run, sort of, I guess? So there's a lot here to contemplate. Now, at the end of this article, there are some tips on what you can do to sort of thwart all the data collection and so forth. Among these suggestions being use multiple Google profiles, which just sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah. Stop using Google.
Insert laugh track right there.
You'd have to know what all 63 services were. I didn't know that YouTube was one.
Oh, I knew right. I knew YouTube was a Google service, but let's see. There's, of course, the Google search. I mean, let's see, Google search, of course, Android and Chrome. And then, of course, you've got Gmail, YouTube, Google Plus, Orkut. Is Orkut
Google
even
Talk.
Still around? Google Talk. And I'm starting to run out of steam here. So what are the other?
Yeah.
What are the other 50 odd services that we're not thinking of? Good luck stopping that.
Yeah.
Not signing into Google search when you search. Yeah, that one's easy. But again, they're still collecting the data in some sort of anonymous way, and I'm sure they're getting an IP address on the search that they could trace back to a provider at least.
And how many times would someone sign into Gmail or even possibly Google Groups to change something and then they don't think about it, they don't sign out, you know, so then their searches are tracked?
Well, if there is any good news here at all, Google Books, Chrome, and Wallet are exempt. So those are the three of the 63 services that are not included, if that makes you feel any better at all. Let's talk about something a little bit more upbeat. Let's take a look at the iPad rumor roundup for the week.
And if you believe all of the rumors, it's going to be interesting because the iPad's going to be both cheaper and more expensive.
Yeah, there will be, you know, several different flavors and it will do everything that you ever wanted it to do. And
it's going
more.
To have 17 home buttons.
Or none.
But you need 9 fingers on each hand to do the gesture, you know, something fun like that.
Yeah, I'm sure there are some people that would like to do a gesture.
Well, we are pretty sure that we're going to find out something on March 7th. That does seem to be coming through the murk and the swirl of stories that are being posted on the internet about the iPad. It really does look like we're going to learn the truth Wednesday. It will be in San Francisco. There was a report that was going to be in New York, but apparently that's not going to happen. It is going to be where it generally is, which is San Francisco. More than 55 million iPads sold since it was introduced. That's pretty impressive. So, Buddy, do you think that better display and speedier processor are probably two fair bets?
Yeah. Yeah, I think better display and speedier processor are a pretty good bet. LTE isn't anything that would surprise me. A smaller iPad, they're talking about, well, Apple's going to introduce a smaller iPad sometime later in the year. That would surprise me.
I could actually see a smaller iPad. I don't think they'll compete on price, but I could see them coming up with a more cost-effective solution. And the only reason I say that is because of the initiatives that they're doing lately on education, I could see it sort of marketed as an iPad for kids. Or not really exclusively an iPad for kids, but, you know, a lower cost thing that you could get junior so that if they ran over it with their bike, it wouldn't be, you know, quite such a heartbreak if it had to be replaced. But if they're talking about using more iPads in the classroom in an education situation, I could see it having some value.
Well, Joe kind of mentioned that, too, on Serotalk 97 when he talked about, you know, reasons to upgrade because, you know, from the 2 to 3, yeah, it's better, yeah, it's faster, but my iPad 2 is not that old and it's been working just pretty well, so what do I really need a new one? But hey, if it's maybe a smaller one or something. So that, I mean, that kind of, it's an interesting idea that they might think about a smaller or a different size. I'm like, buddy, I don't know, but it's definitely not beyond the realm of possibility, I don't think.
Yeah, I'm not sold. I don't know. I'm not sold on it. But as far as the other rumor that Apple's going to raise the price of the base price of the iPad by about $70 or $80, they might, especially if they're going to go for more of the Retina display. Of course, mm-hmm. the display is probably the most expensive component of the whole thing, so that wouldn't surprise me much. Of course, it'll be interesting to see how people react to that after all these iPad 2s, you know, the market's being flooded with used iPad 2s now. Right. So it'll be interesting to see what people do with that. If Apple decides to raise the price, how will people react to that? And will whatever Apple says to justify a price hike, will that be enough for people to fork over an extra $80?
So what about Siri on iPad 3?
Yeah.
That really wasn't even part of the rumors that much.
Actually, I saw that in one article. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not something that people are talking about a lot, but it's not anything that would surprise me to see. I mean, they were even talking about a new version of Apple TV someday with mm-hmm. Siri in it. So putting it in the iPad 3 wouldn't be a huge stretch.
Right. And then finally, home button or no home button?
I don't know. I'm kind of hoping they keep the home button. Of course, mm-hmm. we all know Steve Jobs hated buttons. That's why the mouse only had one. So yeah, maybe no home button, but I don't know. I don't really have an opinion one way or the other on how I think about how they're going to go with that.
Well, what one of our articles talks about the fact that there is a full hand pinch that developers can use to bring you back to the home screen, which I didn't even know about, honestly.
I didn't either.
No,
but
I didn't.
The flip side of that argument is that Siri makes extensive use of the home button. So would they really want to get rid of that? So an interesting conundrum there, I guess, maybe for them.
And the fact that the home button is there at all, and it's the one main button on the surface of the unit, makes mm-hmm. it sort of iconic. Like, yeah. in my mind anyway, like, why would they take that away? Especially when, in another sense, you know, the rumor mills have so much fun with each new release. Is there going to be a home button or isn't there? You know, keep it there to keep the gossips happy, even.
Sure.
I don't know.
But it's one thing about, it's kind of one interesting thing about rumors. You know, all these rumors cite, well, we saw a supplier that leaked this or that or the other thing. And it makes me wonder, okay, so are these suppliers making stuff up? Doubtful. Are they talking about Apple, things that Apple's sort of thinking about and prototyping and then scrapping? Possibly. Mm-hmm. Are they talking about products that other people are doing, but it would be such better PR to say, well, this is something that Apple's ordered? Yeah, maybe. Mm. So who knows where these things are coming from? But I guess the point is that Apple still can surprise us and that all the leaks aren't necessarily things that we can count on.
Right. So do either of you expect anything stunning Wednesday? Do you expect to hear anything that's just going to make your jaw drop, or do you think we probably have a pretty good idea what's coming? I mean, as Joe says, put your tinfoil hat on.
I've heard so many rumors. I don't know. I don't think much would surprise me. I think at this point, what would surprise me would be an entirely new, different, redesigned thing. I think there will definitely be improvements, but I think that this forthcoming iPad is pretty much going to be more of the same.
Mm-hmm. Evolutionary, not revolutionary.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking, I don't think we're going to see huge surprises. But on the other hand, I've heard, like Lisa, I've heard so many rumors, I put no stock in any of them.
Right.
I mean, when the most recent iPhone came out, the biggest surprise was that it was going to be the iPhone 4S and not the iPhone 5. And there has been speculation that the iPad, the next generation iPad, will be the iPad 2S. But who knows?
Yeah. Our final article in this segment, and then we'll move on to other things, because there really are other things to talk about, believe it or not.
There are.
Is the iPad 3 Apple's biggest test? And it's kind of I found it to be a well-written article. I enjoyed reading it. It talked about the fact that, you know, after Steve Jobs' death, as sad as everyone was about that, Siri kind of kept us entertained and kind of kept our minds maybe off of that sad news a little bit. But what will Apple do post Steve Jobs? I mean, there has to be something, you know, really pretty significant that comes out next. What's the next big hardware thing? And how will Tim Cook, that guy's got a lot of pressure on him. You talk about having to perform. My goodness.
Yeah, no joke. Well, wow. I don't know. Is this really because, I don't know, you may recall that there was an article around Steve Jobs' death. I can't remember if it was before or if it was after, but that's basically said that Steve had products in the pipeline and plans and so forth through like 2015 or some crazy thing like that.
Right.
So how much of this is really post Steve Jobs? How much is Tim Cook sort of going by Steve Jobs' roadmap, that mm-hmm. sort of thing? Now, in the sense that we're doing a product launch without Steve's guidance and his what people call the reality distortion field, that's certainly a valid question. But as far as how much of this is really not Steve Jobs and how much is Tim Cook and so forth, I suspect that we're going to see Steve's influence for a little while yet.
Right. I agree. And I think at some point we just have to recognize that Tim Cook is Tim Cook. And, you know, as much as Steve Jobs was a legacy and an icon and will always be remembered and by many people revered, you know, he is no longer with us, and there's a new guy at the wheel, and, you know, life goes on, for lack of a better way to put that. Well, let's talk about AT news, because we've actually got some interesting stuff. Of course, this is CSUN week, and so, as you would expect, there have been a few things announced at CSUN itself. But the first thing on our list actually is something that was announced outside of CSUN. Christopher Toth, the developer of the Qwitter client, has just released QRead, and this is an accessible e-text reader. The idea is, as I understand it, is, you know, when we look at PDFs and EPUB books, Word documents, all of these things, you generally use different programs to access each of them. There are different ways to bookmark or navigate files, and so Christopher has developed this program to kind of create more of a consistent interface, a program that we can use to access several formats, including PDF, EPUB, Bookshare, DAISY. The Bookshare, both zipped and unzipped, DocX, and plain text files, as well as Windows help files, CHM files. You can download a demo of this, and if you want to purchase it, I believe through the end of CSUN, which by the time you hear this will already be over, an introductory price of $20, I'm pretty sure that the price is going to go up to $30 for this product. Thoughts, guys? I haven't had a chance to play with it yet.
Neither have I.
Right.
I haven't really played with it, and for me personally, I haven't found a terribly compelling reason to do so, because I already have programs that read most of those things. If someone is a brand new computer user, they might find this helpful because there's just one interface. And one thing we do know about Christopher's programs is that the interfaces have been traditionally simple and intuitive. But to me, you know, I think, okay, why do I need a Bookshare reader? Why do I need a text reader? Why do I need something that will read DOCX files? So for me, I don't really find that it meets my current needs, but if somebody wants a unified interface, it could be very much of a help. I would have liked to have seen this address Kindle files like that, because I'm on some book-related mailing lists, and whenever you have a gathering of blind people who love to read, the discussion sooner or later gets around to Kindle, because there still are far more books available in Kindle than any other format. And I do think that whomever comes up with a program for easily reading those Kindle books will have an important share of the reading software market, at least among the blind.
Well, and the other thing is that I don't know about you, but when I'm reading, I'm not usually sitting at my computer anymore. I've got some portable thing or another, iPhone or book reader or something, and I'm reading somewhere else other than my computer. So in that respect, I think it would have to bring something very new to the table, such as Kindle support, as you mentioned.
Well, one group I think this is really going to target is college students. If you think about college students studying, you know, you think about pulling files together from various sources, probably needing to set a lot of bookmarks. I don't know if you can actually make notes in the document or not, or in the program itself, rather. But if that's possible, that would be a plus, definitely. So I believe the press release that I read this morning, just before we recorded, indicated that Chris is a college student, which he certainly is. So it would make sense that this program would target that group. I hope that at some point Chris puts the user manual for the program on the main page. Right now you can download a demo, certainly, and you can purchase the product, but it would be nice to actually be able to read the user documentation and kind of get a little better feel for what the program actually does.
I agree. And, you know, you make a good point about bookmarks. You know, when I first read through this, I thought, okay, you can bookmark in text. I already do that, you know. And I had mentioned this the other week to someone and they were surprised. I just put, and this is not original, but I just put a QQ in my text where I want to pick it back up because you're never going to find that occurring anywhere. But for things like EPUB and PDF, where they are read-only kind of files, the ability to bookmark could be very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will definitely give it a look and play with it and see what it does, because I am definitely curious. I'm like you, Lisa. I can't imagine myself personally using the product a lot just because of what I do and how I do it, but that's certainly not any kind of a negative reflection on the product itself. So we definitely have a show notes link. Q-continuum.net is the website. Q-Read is the name of the program, so check it out. Well, one thing that is definitely a part of CSUN is a lot of audio, whether it be interviews or some presentations. We have a link to WindowEyes with Windows 8 presentation that's available online right now. We'll talk about Windows 8 here just a little bit later in the podcast, certainly. But WindowEyes did, or GW Micro did, demo WindowEyes using Windows 8. As I understand it, I have not yet listened to the audio, but I certainly will do that. It was kind of funny. Apparently, they were going to have some slides in the presentation, and the projector didn't work properly. So the sighted people in the room got treated to what blind people in the room got treated to, which was audio only. So there was a little bit of irony of that. Yeah. Someone tweeted, no accommodation for the sighted at CSUN. I thought that was kind of
That's
funny.
That's great.
That's excellent.
We have a lot of audio from CSUN. We have a bunch of interviews that you can listen to. You can certainly listen on iBlink Radio. If you're a member of the System Access Mobile Network, you can certainly listen to SPN Radio from there. Ricky and Joe did a lot of interviews. I believe about 30 is what we're at the time of this recording. And you'll be able to listen to those on SPN Radio for a few weeks. And then we're going to do the same thing with the CSUN interviews that we did with our ATIA 2012 interviews. We will eventually make them available as Serotalk specials. It's probably going to be a three-part special again, looking at the number of interviews that we have. So you can certainly listen on SPN Radio and look forward to the standalone specials in the near future. Our next article talks about an app that will help blind and visually impaired people navigate streets. Lisa, have you had a chance to look at this, and what are your thoughts?
I did, and I had a lot of mixed feelings and thoughts. Part of it seemed very good in that it was providing information. But then when they talked about where they wanted to take development, it sounded almost custodial, like we'll help you get from door to door. And they made kind of a deal about the fact that it was free, which is, mm-hmm. you know, free is always good. But just the positioning of it was one of the first things that they mentioned. And
yeah, it was.
I just felt like someone really has a blindness bias, you know, against. And I couldn't tell whether that was the researchers, although I don't think so. mm-hmm. or if it was the writer of the particular article.
Well, it was even better because it was free, followed by this app cost $100,000 a year to develop.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. You know, if it's for the blind, it's special and it's expensive. But I mean,
we're going to give those poor, unfortunate blind people this thing for free.
Yeah, really. And, you know, why not charge, you know, $4.99 or, you know, to help defray their costs? I think that a lot of blind people, and this is sort of going off a little beyond the scope of the article, but I think a lot of blind people either feel demoralized or entitled because so little is expected. But I think this has great potential. It would be wonderful to know what bus was coming so that mm-hmm. you knew, so that you knew if it was the one you wanted.
There were a couple of things that I was a little disturbed by in what they wanted to implement. Now, how long you had to cross the street, how many lanes, that's fantastic. But the ability to, did I read this right, that they said that that the app would have the ability to change a walk signal?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
I have issues with that.
Well, I don't think it was so much to change a walk signal as it was to interface with the current technology so that the walk button could be pressed.
Okay. Okay. Right. Well, that's not so much of a problem, but I'm just picturing people getting this app and like making all the lights red or something, you know, just,
yeah.
Right. I mean, yeah, granted that walk signals aren't nearly long enough in far too many cases. And in other cases, they're completely unpredictable as to how long that they're going to be. But the ability to just change them as though one were an ambulance or a police car would be a bit disturbing.
Yes. And the other thing that was disturbing to me was they talked about testing in environments that had safe streets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, doesn't that seem a bit counterintuitive?
It does. It does. If all you're testing it on are safe streets.
Yeah, if the streets are already safe, what do we need them there for? We need them on dangerous streets.
Yes. And I think, I really hope that they include the ability to customize what messages you receive. Because, you know, by the time they say, this is a 6-lane plus intersection, traffic light controlled, you have 9.7 seconds to cross. You know, you're done.
And you've wasted about five of those. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And then you have the whole issue also of not everyone is comfortable traveling with something in their ears. And I thought, you know,
that's
what
why
a
they
great
wear aftershocks bone
exactly,
conduction headphones.
Exactly.
Good plug. Excellent. Which you can find reviewed on Serotalk, by the way.
That's right. Exactly. You can.
But I thought, wow, what a cool, very timely in a sense, because that would be really right. great. But I could also see older people having difficulty with this. Or, I mean, when I lived in Philadelphia, the traffic sometimes was so loud, it wasn't so much a sound as it just seemed like a roar. Mm. And I think that sometimes hearing audio could be difficult. My other and final thought on this, because I really could kind of go on at length, is that I hope that they implement some functionality for people who are deafblind. Mm-hmm. I hope that the information is spoken using VoiceOver so that it can be read on a Braille display. And I hope that there might be some sort of setting so that the phone could vibrate when it's safe to walk, kind of like the vibrotactile arrows on the walk signals, the accessible pedestrian signals.
So, I mean, it sounds like there's a lot of questions that we have, and as has been already stated, it may just be the way the article was presented. Seems to be more questions than answers at this point. My thought was that this thing almost sounds too good to be true, like it's going to do everything in a free app, and that's not possible. So we may not be getting the straight story. There may be a whole lot more to this. But definitely, it's in a very fascinating development, and I for one, will be anxious to learn a little bit more. I noticed ACB Minnesota President Ken Rogers is quoted in the article quite a bit. So apparently, there have been some people that have been working with this researcher. So, you know, it will be interesting to learn about this product from some other sources as well. Well, iPlex releases LookTel Recognizer. It's an app for the iOS, for the iPhone, rather. And the way I understand it is you take a picture of an object and then say what it is. You basically label it, and then you build up a database. And then it, of course, then it will tell you when you take a picture of this device later what it is. I've been seeing a lot of comments on AppleViz and various places. Haven't had a chance to really thoroughly dig into the comments. So again, I'm not sure if I totally understand this app. Does it come already with a database at all?
No.
Do you have to start from scratch?
Yes. My understanding from what I've seen, and I haven't tried it yet either, is that it will recognize things that have a barcode on them without your help. But anything else, yes, you have to build up your own private library. Your library isn't shared with anybody else's library. And so building up your library could take, it could be fairly time consuming. And I would suppose that would mean you'd need somebody to help you actually build the thing the first time. Otherwise, you know, if you were doing it all yourself, you would already know what these things were and you wouldn't need to recognize them. So I'm not sure how useful it's going to be until we actually get a publicly available database of lots of things.
Right.
Yes, yeah. And people have talked about the possibility of collaborating and sharing databases. My understanding is that it doesn't have a lot of barcodes, that there are some, but not as many as some other apps have used. And I've listened to two podcasts on this app, and the one was sort of mixed review, and the other was more positive. The point about taking a picture of an item is that you have to take a picture of that part of the box which is different. One of them used an example where you had a box of Fiber One, I don't know, chocolate chip bars. Mm-hmm. Well, if you took a picture of, for example, the Fiber One logo, then you might have Fiber One raisin bars, but it would still announce them as Fiber One chocolate chip bars. So you need to capture in your photo that part of the box that is distinctive. So that is a little bit problematic. I just want to mention, too, that in this whole discussion and in the comments I've seen on Twitter, there is another app that is coming out, and I think you can share information, and that is called Audio Labels, and that's made by the same people that have the Type in Braille app. And then the other thing is, a lot of people were sort of underwhelmed by the performance of the Digitize app that was supposed to do the same thing. And this is really where the power of social networking comes in, because one person tweeted, you know, once I upgraded to iOS 5, even though Digitize was released before iOS 5, it really flies now and it's wonderful. And more people have been tweeting similar things. Oh, wow, I tried it with iOS 5, and you're right, it's great. So it's always good, I think, to look ahead and look at what's just come out, but look at what has been out and see if there have been any evolutions in its development that can make it easier to use as well.
Great point, actually. Yeah, I mean, because, you know, I remember listening to the interview of with Nancy Miracle from Digitize. Seemed like a really nice lady, really seemed to get it, the need for accessibility, really was on board with it. And I suppose it's like a lot of things, you know, development takes time. It really does. Things don't just happen overnight. You know, we want them to, especially us non-programmer types. It's like, yes, I want this app and I want it to do these 15 things and I want it tomorrow, please.
For 99 cents or less.
Yeah, for 99 cents, absolutely. Well, free would be better, but I'll pay 99 cents, not a penny more. But, you know, yeah, we've talked about that on this podcast more than once. I think we as users need and are becoming a little more educated, but need to continue to be educated to the fact that, you know, we really do need to cut developers a little bit of slack and work with them professionally and patiently and give them a chance to get it right, because they don't always get it right the first time, but they may get it right the second or third try. Also from Blind Bargains, Code Factory announces Braille support for Android with mobile accessibility version 1.9. And if you listen to a recent That Android Show episode, you'll remember an interview with Edward Sanchez where he talks a little bit about Braille support. He couldn't get into it a lot at that point, but it appears that that has been released. And this should be on the Android market by the end of March. And in our final Blind Bargains story from CSUN for this podcast, we have a free mobile accessibility app, which is now available for Sprint, Boost, and Virgin Mobile. It's available in the Android market under the name Wireless Accessibility. It's the complete version of mobile accessibility, unlike AT&T's version. So definitely check out the show notes links. Also, you can listen to JJ's podcasts from CSUN on iBlink Radio as well, or the whole Blind Bargains team's podcasts from CSUN 2012 on iBlink Radio. So go check that out.
So there's a YouTube video posted that is a demonstration of ChromeVox, which is the, well, they call it a screen reader. It's not really a screen reader, but it's a sort of the talking plugin to make Chrome, the Chrome web browser, and also Chrome OS accessible. So they've got this YouTube video, and fortunately it's an audio described YouTube video, because without audio description it would be completely useless.
It would.
Yes.
It would be completely useless because there's absolutely no soundtrack on it whatsoever.
There's nice music. It's like the commercials you see on TV.
Music, but yeah, it's exactly like that. Yeah. But it's a nice video. It really highlights how people would use a shared app like Google Docs.
Yeah, we're coming into more of those 63 services, I think.
I think so. Right. Yeah. Yeah. But it shows how in this case, a college student and a teaching assistant would collaborate and look at the same document and be able to comment it and chat and do all this stuff seamlessly with this ChromeVox, accessibly with Chromebooks. So it's like an advertisement for two or three different things. It's kind of well done, and except for, like I say, there's no soundtrack apart from some music, and so it's vital that it be video described, which it was, so that was great.
Yeah,
and there was a link if you don't want the video described.
Just the music, yeah.
Yeah, if you just want the music, you can do that, but we'll have a link to the audio described version in the show notes.
Yeah, this was really well done. The description was good. It was obvious that they had written out a script and that they had given attention to detail. I mean, it was definitely professionally produced. And after I watched this video, I was reading some of the comments from people, and they basically said, wow, this is a surprise. I didn't know that this person had a problem with their site, with her site. You know, they didn't realize this until the end, although the headphones would have been a giveaway, I suppose, because they... Mm-hmm. They did
describe, they might have been listening to music.
The use of headphones. Exactly. Exactly. That's true. Yeah. I really like a trend I'm seeing, and that is of various kinds of applications on various platforms being brought into the mainstream. Siri is useful for blind and sighted. This could have some application for sighted people. I'm thinking specifically someone with dyslexia, because it could read the information. But I really like the fact that it's being brought out into the open more, and it's not just stuck in a closet as an afterthought. It's out there and it's being discussed, and I think that's great. I find that of people I talk to, in the last few years, I've heard fewer comments than I used to along the lines of, well, I mean, someone who's blind can't use a computer. You know, you're hearing and seeing less of that, I think.
The other thing that's really great about seeing more accessibility in mainstream products and more emphasis on that, more publicity of that, is the publicity is actually very good. This is a fantastic example of that. Like Lisa was saying earlier, you know, comments said that, geez, I didn't know that the person was blind until the end. So we're seeing that disabled people are a mainstream, and B, doing normal things in a normal way, and the publicity surrounding accessibility isn't, geez, look what we're doing for these people that wouldn't have anything if not for what we were doing for them, but we now have the tools to help people that need additional tools. We're helping them to integrate more fully into society in a normal way, and I think that's as important, if not more important, really, than the fact of the inclusion of accessibility and more thought towards accessibility being included at the beginning of a product that we're starting to see more.
And that leads just perfectly into a blog post that Mike Calvo has written, and you can read it over on serotalk.com, entitled Just Another Checkbox. And it talks about that accessibility just needs to be a part of the core development plan for developers. It just needs to be one of those things that's on that checklist. Is it accessible? Yes, it is. So, okay, we can check that checkbox, you know, instead of bolting it on later. And how much less the cost is to add accessibility if you do it from the very beginning, from the ground up, as to go back and try to make it work later after the whole product has been written. It's a great blog post, and we actually have some blog comments, and we'll talk about those when we get to mailbag as well on that post. So go check it out, saratalk.com.
I just want to say real quickly that this is a drum I've been beating for a long time, and so actually has Sarotech in general. We've been really promoting this, not just the accessible digital lifestyle for our products, but really just how important it is to have mainstream access. This is something that's really important to all of us, and sure is nice to see that other people are catching on.
It definitely is. And speaking of accessibility catching on, let's talk about Windows 8. February 29th was the consumer preview release day. I believe I read that 1 million downloads of Windows 8 preview have happened up to this point. It's probably more than that now. There's a lot that's been blogged about, written about. This thing was launched in Barcelona, Spain. Along with it was the Windows 8 App Store. I believe some 100 apps were released, which are free until Windows 8 is officially released. A lot of what you read, of course, in the mainstream media is going to be very, very visual, and that kind of makes sense. The one thing that I did notice was a consolidation of passwords and credentials into a single Microsoft account. That kind of caught my attention a little bit. 100,000 code changes in Windows. That's amazing, actually.
It's a huge number.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The big thing that people are worrying about is the whole deal with both Metro and classic interfaces and how that's going to reconcile and how we're going to deal with desktops that don't have touch and working alongside things like tablets and smartphones and all that kind of thing. And how we're going to transition from one to the next and so forth. That's kind of an interesting discussion. And of course, as far as accessibility goes, we're seeing that Narrator actually has some useful screen reader functionality. We're seeing that Narrator has navigation commands. It looks a lot like something else that we all know and love called VoiceOver.
Wow. Imagine that.
Lots of similarities. I'm seeing a lot of similarities in Narrator. Actually, it's kind of strange. It's sort of a mishmash between VoiceOver command structure and ChromeVox command structure, and it's a little of both, and I'm not sure how I feel about it. I've only played with it a little bit. It's definitely an improvement over Narrator up to Windows 7. The voices are certainly better. The ability to navigate is better. You can actually do web pages and things with Narrator. So I'll be interested to see exactly what that means as things progress. One thing that I also noticed as far as installing is nothing revolutionary here, guys. Sorry. Basically, installing Windows 8 is going to be about like installing any other version of Windows as far as accessibility is concerned, which is to say if you start the install from a previously running version of Windows and use your screen reader for the initial setup and then start Narrator after you get through all the setup and everything when it reboots, you're good to go. But if you are going to install from the install DVD onto a completely empty system with nothing on it, you're not going to have any accessibility. And you will need sighted assistance until the reboot and sound hardware and all these other things get set up, just like before. So if you're looking for an independent out-of-the-box install, keep on looking because you're not going to find it here.
So is your sense then that Windows Phone really will be accessible to us in the near future then?
Well, if everything that I'm hearing about with Windows 8 being able to run across devices, in other words, across platforms, is true, and it appears to be because there's going to be Windows 8 for ARM processors and all this sort of thing, then yes, I think that we are going to see access to Windows 8 mobile phones, and it's going to look a bit I think it's going to look a bit like iPhone and Android. I'm not sure if it'll look more like iPhone or more like Android, but we are going to have it, and it's going to be, we're going to have access to the touch interface, judging by the accessibility blog post that we saw last week. I don't think that we're going to have any more inaccessible versions of Windows Phone. So yeah, I think Windows Phone accessibility is a pretty darn good bet.
That's great news. There's a lot that we have links to, and you can certainly read those articles in our show notes. We're not going to spend a lot of time going through all the information because, as I say, a lot of it really is from a visual person's perspective, but it's still pretty interesting to read just the kind of the mainstream viewpoint on Windows 8, what people are thinking, what their concerns are. One of the things I found interesting is that Microsoft is going to extend the support period for Windows 7 until 2020, so from 5 years to 10. And there was the question, well, does that mean that Microsoft is concerned that Windows 8 is going to be a flop and they're just kind of hedging their bets? And the answer is probably that's not really it. Consumer versions of Windows used to have 5-year support. Business versions had 10-year support. And so what they've probably done is just to streamline that and just offer the 10-year support for both. That's according to the one article that we have in our show notes here.
And that really makes a lot of sense, actually, to do that. And it's really not out of line with what they did with XP. Remember, they were going to stop supporting XP when Windows 7 came out, but there was such an outcry that they're still supporting it, and they will for at least another year?
I believe
another year.
Yeah, I believe that's correct. Our final Windows story is Windows too expensive.
Yeah, you'll love the short answer.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Apple OS X upgrades for $30. Windows on a new PC, and I didn't really realize this. Apparently, it's kind of hard to know exactly what you're paying for Windows on a new PC. Best guesstimate is $50 to $90 when you get your new PC, which could only cost you $250, which is not a real great PC, I don't think.
No.
But you can do that. No. You can get a PC for that.
You can. It won't be much
of one. That's the duct tape deluxe model.
Yeah.
Just about.
But $90 of that 250 is Windows? Wow. But it gets better because an upgrade copy of Win 7 Premium is $120. If you want the full version, however, it's going to cost you about $200. So that's a lot of money, you know, for an operating system. However, they point out that Microsoft offers some updates, maybe a little longer than the Apple OS. You know, I don't know. Just kind of.
Yeah, Apple really only supports one major version ago. And right. Since their release cycle is once every 18 months, well, you do the math, it's not as long. Now,
it does make me wonder if Microsoft has increased its support cycle, the length of its support cycle, in part to justify the cost of Windows.
That's certainly possible.
Yeah.
And actually, even before the OS X upgrades were $30, they were $129, which is still quite a bit less expensive than buying, say, a new version of Windows. But again, looks like the support life for a version of Mac OS X was about 3 years, coincidentally, the length of AppleCare. So there you go. I don't know. I don't know what that means.
We have one story that's kind of Apple-related. Well, it is definitely Apple-related, but it's also music-related. Apple is reportedly looking to maybe create a new audio file format. This is kind of interesting to me, a new streaming audio format that could handle varying degrees of bandwidth. So, for example, if you had a lot of bandwidth, you could listen to a studio quality track. If you didn't, then you'd get a more standard audio quality. That kind of makes sense to me, I think.
I think that's kind of cool. I would really like that. That would be, well, and it makes sense that they're introducing something, seeing as how last year they open sourced their one lossless audio codec. I don't know if anyone's actually doing anything with that, but they did. And so that they're working on something else isn't a huge surprise.
One general tech story. This one interests me personally. Verizon to offer shared data family plan by mid-year. Right now you pay $30 a data plan, and my wife has an iPhone. I'm soon to get one in the next few months. So it would be nice to be able to maybe bring the cost of that plan down just a little bit if we could share data. So I'm kind of looking forward to that personally. Do any other carriers do that right now?
I don't think so.
I didn't either.
Not that I know.
No, I don't think. Right. Well, you know what? Okay. T-Mobile might, but I don't recall for sure.
Okay. Well, write to us at resources@saratalk.com and tell us if we are right or wrong about that. That would be a good question for you guys to answer. And what are your thoughts? Are you interested in a shared data plan? How many of you actually have family members that you would be willing to share data with? So again, resources@saratalk.com. We always love to hear from you. Or you can leave an iReport via Android or iOS, your iPhone or your Android phone. Coming up after the break, your emails and your blog comments, as well as improving vision by playing video games? Really? Right here on the Saratalk podcast.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared.
It's like tiny nails in the air poke my lungs.
I start to cough.
Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
Today, one out of 13 children suffer from some form of asthma, accounting for nearly one-third of all emergency room visits.
I feel like I'm choking.
It's kind of like an elephant is on my chest.
A little whistle sound comes out when I breathe.
But while your child may suffer from asthma, asthma doesn't have to make your child suffer. There are simple ways you can prevent your child's next attack. To learn more, call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS. That's 1-866-662-8822. Log on to www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many.
I feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
We're back here on Saratalk Podcast 98 with Buddy and Lisa, because this is CSUN week, and Joe, Ricky, and Mike are probably winging their way home. We're very shortly going to do that as we record this podcast. Let's open up the mailbag, and Lisa, why don't you take the first one?
Well, this comes from Sandra, and this is a comment, or actually a question, that was sent in via our blog, and so we do encourage you to check that out at sarotalk.com. We love your comments and your emails and your thoughts. So Sandra asks, could you please comment on the quality of the microphone? And I'm assuming this is on our Aftershocks review. She's seen the comment that when you're using the mic, that the other party is hearing everything that they say echoed back to them. And my guess is that has something to do with the more open design of the headphones, possibly. When Buddy and Mike talked about this, they said that the person next to you could hear audio, but I do not have these. I have looked at them and have considered and am considering them, but this is probably a question for Mr. Aftershocks himself.
Yeah.
That would be you, Buddy.
Okay. So, yeah, I suspect that it has to do with where the reviewer had the mic placed. You do have to clip the mic somewhere on your clothing because otherwise it's hanging down too far and then people say that you're faint. On the other hand, you have to be sure not to clip it too close, I guess, to where the earphone is, or excuse me, the speaker is on the headphones. I didn't get any complaints of people hearing themselves being echoed back. That doesn't mean it doesn't happen. It just means that I must have gotten lucky with mic placement. So I suppose that it's a possibility. I did not get into that. I didn't hear that. The only thing that people told me was that they heard my room ambiance, which wouldn't be too surprising, really, and that the audio quality was all right. But, you know, like anything else, of course, you know, mic quality is subjective. So I hope that was a helpful answer. I suspect it was not. But that's about all I can say about that, I guess.
I think it's one of those things where your mileage may vary. But yeah. Mm-hmm. It still sounds like really exciting technology to me.
It is. I'm still sold on them.
You know, speaking of that technology, we actually have a blog comment from Debbie Gabe who talks about the fact that that audiologists use bone conduction technology and have for years in testing hearing. I don't know that I really realized that, but we were talking about that pre-show, actually, before we recorded, that that they certainly do that. And even people with hearing loss are making use of that. So this is not new technology, but perhaps the ways that we use it continue to evolve, as with a lot of things. So very interesting stuff. And people have really found this particular review quite interesting. We've gotten a lot of comments about it. So that's very good.
And, you know, if you've been following the promotion for our birthday, which just ended about a week ago, by the time you hear this, one of the things that we have done is anyone who bought one of our products at a discount during that time has been entered into a drawing to win a pair of Aftershocks headphones. We have two of them to give away, and you do not need to be present to win, but I would encourage you to be present all the same. We will be doing that on Thursday, March 8th, on This Month in Technology with the Seraspectives podcast.
Definitely check that out. Well, Mike Arrigo sends us an email, and he talks about getting directions with mainstream apps. He says that's actually pretty easy to do. The question is kind of knowing where you are at all times. He really recommends the Motion X GPS app for the iPhone. Buddy, what are your thoughts? Do you agree with that?
I haven't played with Motion X. I've been pretty happy with Navigon for a couple of reasons. One being, of course, that the maps are stored locally, which means if I lose internet connectivity, I'm not sunk. I agree with his assertions, though, that if what you need are directions, Navigon is fantastic, or any of the mainstream apps are fantastic for that. If you need to know what you're coming up to and what's around you and so forth, there are applications for that, too. Around Me is a great one for knowing what points of interest are around you. There was one that unfortunately isn't made anymore that I find particularly useful. It was called IMAPU, is unfortunately no longer made, but it was really cool because it would give you your nearest approximate address, your nearest landmark, and your nearest cross street. And so I would use that in combination with Navigon and Around Me, all three together for different things. Not an elegant solution, but it worked. So, and occasionally I would also use the Sendero Look Around app as well, which, as Mike said, it does this somewhat, but not as well as other apps do, and certainly none of the other Sendero apps. For example, it'll tell you your nearest cross street and what street you're coming up to, but its ability to tell you about landmarks, at least in my neighborhood, is pretty limited. It never finds any. Mm-hmm. So using several mainstream apps in conjunction with each other is, like I say, it's a solution. It does the job. Could it be better? Yeah, I think that a blindness-specific GPS app would be great for that reason alone, to have all of that stuff in one place instead of having to use two or three things.
Yes, I know I personally layer my GPS apps as well, and many of the blind iPhone users that I've spoken to do the same. You have one app for this and one app for that, and that number of apps can really be a good thing because, for example, if you're traveling through a semi-familiar area, you may already know what's there. You just need street names and such. But if you're in a brand new area, you want to know, you know, what is around you, what's close.
Mm-hmm. Great points. And that's really what I hear many, many people say, you know, is I think the layering approach probably is really the most popular, actually. So it's going to be interesting to see, especially with Sendero and the new app they're working on, you know, what they're able to do and how they're able to integrate a lot of the functionality into one app.
And what price point they're going to put it at.
Right.
Yes. Right. Unfortunately, the layering approach has also been referred to as the drain your battery fast approach.
Yeah.
So
right.
Just be aware of that and be sure that when you're done, I go into the app switcher and I kill those apps so that they are not running in the background.
Yeah. Good tip. Great tip. From the blog, Stephen Guerra and Milano Hyacinth both express agreement with Mike's blog post, Just Another Checkbox. We mentioned that earlier in the podcast, and they really, really enjoyed Mike's comments there. I'd like to thank you for your emails this week. Certainly send an email to resources@serotalk.com. Go to our blog and leave a comment, or you can send an iReport via your iPhone or your Android phone. Lastly, you can call 866-997-2522, affectionately known as the Blab line. 866-997-BLAB-2522. It's time now for Roundabout. This first Roundabout story, when I first saw it, I thought, no, this can't be possible. And then as you read, you kind of begin to understand how this actually happened. NASCAR driver tweets during race, adds 130,000 followers. So I had this mental image of Brad Keselowski cruising around the track at 200 miles an hour, tweeting at the same time.
Made another left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not exactly what happened. There was a unfortunately,
still
an explosion.
Alive, FTW.
Bang. Oh, crap.
Go ahead. Yeah. So what actually happened was there was an explosion on the track. Unfortunately, a truck blew up, jet fuel, and the drivers were off the track for quite some time. And so Brad started uploading photos and tweeting updates as he was sitting in his car. He took live questions about things such as the battery life of his phone and, you know, where his phone lives during races in his pocket. That's probably where it belongs, actually.
Yeah, right? He can't plug and, it into a cigarette lighter in his stock car there.
No, no. So I guess when you're sitting waiting on, you know, the race to restart, you don't have anything else to do. You drag out your iPhone and you tweet. So, you know, hey, that works. 130,000 new followers. That's pretty impressive,
wow.
Actually. Pretty good number.
Yeah.
Our next Roundabout story, blind attorney teaches self-defense and overcomes fear. I kind of had mixed feelings about this story. And again, I suspect it has to do with the writing more than the person. And I don't know that for sure. Elizabeth Miska of Worcester, in 2005... she began to lose her sight. She was an experienced real estate attorney. She was diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa, had to give up her driver's license in 2008. The article really kind of talks about she didn't want to use a cane because it was a symbol of vulnerability for blind people or for people. You know, I don't know if those were her thoughts initially.
I think so.
I do too. I don't think it was written very well, personally. I don't think it expressed.
No.
It almost made it sound like that was a fact.
So many of these things aren't.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It was almost stated as a fact rather than this was her opinion or this was her feeling at the time. So
sadly, I think among a lot of sighted people, it is a fact because
yeah.
They see a blind person using a cane or with a dog. And even, you know, sometimes with a dog, they think this person is vulnerable. And she kind of backs up that assertion by saying that she observed, you know, she had enough remaining sight to observe body language
mm-hmm.
and that people looked uncomfortable and they looked vulnerable.
Mm.
We know, of course, that that is not true, that use of a cane does not need to make you and does not inherently make you a target. But
right.
Again, we're back to public perception.
Right. But she did something very positive with her life. She, there was a, of course, downturn in the real estate market in 2008. She took mobility instruction, began to learn how to properly use the cane. It says she attended a conference for the blind in 2010. We don't know which one, according to this article, but learned about martial arts from a visually impaired person's perspective. And she became interested in that, began to take the classes. Eventually, she brought the British instructor, Stephen Nichols, to the United States. And she took the instructor's training and began to teach eventually and set up classes. She went back to school then and got her degree as an attorney in disability law. and is continuing her practice and continuing to work on helping blind people learn martial arts. So Lisa, are you going to become a martial arts expert? Is that something that you plan on doing?
A martial arts expert? No. Hmm? Someone who is savvy and aware and knows enough self-defense to be, you know, potentially a threat? Absolutely. I think as blind people, especially, but also just as members of the human race, I think it's important that we protect ourselves. We do what we can to protect ourselves. You know, a lot of my perspective at coming at life, you know, and I've kind of gotten known for this, especially among family. They say, I can't believe you turned out to be such a geek. But, you know, as a computer geek, I do all these things to protect my computer. I have antivirus. I have anti-malware. And I really think it's incumbent on us to do what we can to protect ourselves. You know, and there are various methods. This was called the one-touch method. This sounds like it is not, and I could be wrong here, but this does not sound like it's true martial arts in the sense of the word where it takes years to master. Right. This sounds like it is a self-defense seminar. And I think that's a great thing. The only other thing that I noticed in this article, and I see this so much in public media, is the use of the word vision for sight. If I could, I would cut the V word from the English vocabulary.
Oh, hallelujah.
It's like she lost her sight or she lost her eyesight is one thing, but she lost her vision. I mean, there's a verse in the Bible that says, where there is no vision, the people perish. Mm. And they're not talking about sight. You know, they're talking about like a vision for the future. And I don't know, it just makes me cringe every time. And this article was especially heavily peppered with vision-related references. Although, to give them credit, they did use the word blind, which was pretty amazing. Because we all know that people have coined new words just to avoid using the word blind. I mean, we've now got sighted and, or sightless and unsighted. And I actually heard de-sighted, that one kind of... Wow.
I decided to be de-sighted.
Actually, when I was a little kid, I got the biggest charge out of this because the transcription agency that brailled some of my textbooks was called the Delighted Volunteers. Oh, and when I would get a new book, no, I thought it was cool.
Actually, it is.
It could be cruel or it could be cool, depending. This was back in the 70s. So the first thing I would do when I got a new book was to look on the first page and see if it was done by Delighted Volunteers. And if it was, I always kind of felt like I was waving hello to a friend. You know, that was like the age of fourth grade where knock-knock jokes were the coolest thing ever.
Yeah,
and so that made that made my week.
As these things go, that one's pretty good, I got to say. Because, I mean, there was that article I saw last week that I commented on Twitter where they were talking about this blind cheerleader, and the article says, she's visually impaired, but you'd never know it by talking to her. What?
Yeah. Uh-huh. That's back to you don't look blind.
Wow. I have a friend, a musician friend that I saw just over this past weekend, and he made the comment to me that someone asked him if he had a hard time seeing, and he said, no, I don't have any trouble at all. I can't see a lick.
So, exactly.
Sounds like something I'd say.
Yeah.
People ask me if I can see anything, and I used to say, only if I walk into something really hard, I see stars. But you know what? I swear there's a special revenge for smart aleck people, because this woman put her arm around me, and she said, well, then that must be some sort of psychological phenomenon. Do you find yourself walking into things hard because you can see? And I haven't said it since, you know, that kind of
thing. I bang my head on purpose so I can see something. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, you know, kind of back to this self-defense story, I actually personally found this story pretty timely because there are several women that I know, my wife included, who are actually thinking about taking self-defense classes and, you know, even like conceal and carry. And I mean, I kind of wonder if this is something in our society. I mean, we live in some tough times and everyone knows it. And I wonder if we're maybe all becoming just a little bit more aware that this is not maybe the most friendly world we live in this day and time.
And I can't remember where I heard this, but I know that there are some courses, although I don't know if it's official courses or if it's just instructors, who have taught people to use their canes. And My mobility instructors, fortunately, are still alive and well, because if they were not, they would be rolling in their graves. I could hear them saying, your cane is not a weapon.
Right.
But I've heard of people, instructors, teaching people to use the cane as a weapon, both a rigid straight cane or the cane folded up, and they'll use it for self-defense purposes.
That's an interesting, yeah, that's something that we should perhaps look into even for a future story, actually. That would be a very interesting debate. Wow.
That sounds like we should really be referencing that one Onion article about blind people taking over the world, that were a huge conspiracy, and we carry around cudgels and have vicious attack dogs and leave messages for each other in elevators.
In our final roundabout this week, suppose you took your child to the doctor and he prescribed a video game. Wouldn't that be cool? Your child would think it was pretty cool. Alina Roberts actually has written an article about how video games can possibly help improve vision. Daphne Maurer of McMaster University worked with 6 adults who had dense cataracts. And apparently these can be removed, but even if they're taken off, sometimes the damage is already done to the eye. So it's possible to retrain the visual cortex to improve the vision somewhat. And playing video games, as it turns out, 40 hours a month, helped children read at least one line lower on the eye chart. So, you know, they could see objects with lower contrast and notice more subtle differences between objects that were moving. One of the things that's talked about in the article is we need some less violent games. Perhaps we need some appropriate games for these youngsters to play. But it sounds like in music therapy, one of the things about music is, you know, you may be training someone to do something like, you know, if you're trying to get a child to speak correctly and you have to repeatedly say something over and over and over, it's not very much fun to do that. But if you're singing, it all of a sudden becomes enjoyable. So you don't even realize you're working someone with asthma that needs to increase their respiratory capacity might take up playing the trumpet. So instead of doing respiratory therapy, you know, that's maybe not so pleasant, actually learning to play an instrument can be of a benefit. So to me, this kind of fits right into that category, I think.
I hadn't even thought of that.
Yeah.
This article really raised more questions for me. I would like to have known how long these effects were seen. For example, if the game was played for 2 months, would the person's sight improve more? Also, does the improvement stay after the game is discontinued? Because not all games will hold people's interests indefinitely, or kids develop new hobbies, new interests. Also, I wanted to know, what is it about playing these games that improves the eyesight of the children? And how could that be implemented in daily life? Not that you would want to say, for example, move your eyes up, move your eyes down, look for the detail. I think the whole play the game as therapy concept is a good one. But it would seem that the more that could be implemented also into daily life, you know, even if mom could say, look up there, do you see the bird on that tree, you know, or whatever, that would be very helpful. So this was kind of a snapshot of something that's being discussed. And I, for one, would like maybe some additional information.
Great thoughts, great points. And perhaps our listeners can write to us, resources@sarotalk.com. Give us their opinions, give us their thoughts. Certainly go over to our show notes page, sarotalk.com, and feel free to comment on the blog. As we say, you can always leave an iReport via your iPhone or your Android device. Call 866-997-2522, or we haven't even mentioned this one yet, go to Twitter, twitter.com/sarotalk. If you want, you can just read our Twitter feed there on the webpage, or you can follow us if you have a Twitter client that you like to use. We are really close to 1,000 followers right now, very close, and I would love to see us break that barrier and be able to report to you that Sarotalk has 1,000 Twitter followers. So if you haven't followed us and you've been thinking about it, go ahead and do that, please. You can certainly subscribe to our podcast via iTunes. And if you do that, be sure and rate us and write a review of the podcast. We would really, really appreciate that as well. I'd like to thank Buddy and Lisa for joining me today. Thank you both for being a part of the podcast today.
Thanks for
thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Until next time, have a great week. And Lisa says,
"Huh?
Yeah." Ricky always says, "Thanks for listening."
Oh no, Buddy's Ricky.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android Market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.